Welcome to season 3 of Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Tawny. We're so excited to be back. And we are also excited to be sponsored by Tempest for this season. Tempest is a program that helps you stop drinking and start feeling better. As of this spring, they have a brand new membership program that offers monthly content, community, and expert guidance. You can learn more about all of their different membership options right now by heading to jointempest.com.
We are huge fans of Tempest. We know what fantastic work they're doing to help people stop drinking.
Absolutely. And what we love about them is that they're also super inclusive of all communities.
What's up, you guys? It's your favorite people, Tawny and Lisa, reporting live.
Hi. And we are super excited today. We have two guests with an incredible new book that I just finished reading, and it's fantastic. It's called The Sober Lush. And you should definitely check it out. And so we have with us today the two authors of the book. Jardine Liber is the author of novels, Here, Kitty, Kitty, and White Fur. That sounds like that should be of appeal to Tawny, who is a cat person. And she currently lives in Los Angeles. Amanda Iyer Ward is the author of 7 novels and a collection of short stories. Her work has been optioned for film and television and published in 15 countries. She lives with her family in Austin, Texas and Ouray, Colorado. Her newest novel is The Jet Setters, which we just found out is a Reese pick.
Giant
congratulations on that. Hello, sunshine. And welcome to both of you. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So The Sober Lush, maybe you could sort of share your story and, you know, how it came about and what you did. We are particularly fascinated, Tawny and I, because as two friends who then started a podcast, we know that you were two friends who then, you know, struck out on this creative project, which is an interesting dynamic. So we'd love to hear the story of The Sober Lush and how it came about.
Well, it came directly from conversations Amanda and I had. And it's funny to look at the book now and see the trajectory of our ideas, because we didn't set out to write it knowing what we wanted to put forth. The writing of the book itself was kind of like a discovery mission. But we both met, I'd been sober, I think 4 years at that point. And Amanda was just entering sobriety, and we'd been introduced by someone who said, you know, you're both sober writers and I have a feeling you'll click. And so we had these amazing, immediately connected, long conversations about how bewildered we were about, you know, sobriety, why it was so difficult, how we couldn't get our heads around big pieces of it. And the book sort of came around from those talks and from wanting to like see what was on the other side to celebrate now that we had kind of done the hard work of crossing the line.
Yeah. I mean, when I met Jardine, it changed a lot for me because I knew I had to get sober. I'd been sort of moderating my ass off for a long time and with very variable success. But anyway, I knew it was time to quit. And I would go to meetings and I hadn't found really anyone to relate to. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do all the same things. I'm going to have the same life without wine. And it hurt. And it wasn't fun. And it was depressing. And then when I met Jardine and went over to her house, I'll never forget going to your house for the first time, Jardine. She had this beautiful living room filled with books, and she made French press coffee, and we just got cozy with her Chihuahua lover man. And I thought, well, this is a beautiful life without booze. This is what I want. And so as we became friends, we talked about how that wasn't often given as an option. You know, I hadn't heard that you could change your whole life around. I just thought you had to live the same life without alcohol. And that was very hard for me. But so we decided to try to write a book about how one could do that and how we were learning to do it. And interestingly, both of us are writers, but writing in the first person never worked. I had been asked for a memoir for a while and it just fell apart every time I used the I voice. But when it was we, which was me and Jardine and a big mysterious tribe that we're still hoping to find. It just all worked. Like, we do this, we do that. Felt really wonderful.
That's great. I mean, what it really brought out, and I love this because I haven't, you know, seen it expressed this way before, is that you bring the readers into your own experience of, you know, simple pleasures, some big, some small things that you can do, but in order to really not just live a sober life, but live a lush life, live a life where, you know, you are reaching potentials you never thought you had and doing things that, you know, really come unexpected. And I think a lot of our listeners are Quitlet fans, big Quitlet fans. And, you know, I think thinking about how you bring that to people and bring it out to the world. I mean, was this, a lot of them are writing too. Was it a challenge for you to come out and put something out there so publicly about your recovery? And you're very clear about, you know, the struggles that you had before, what was going on in your life. So you don't pull any punches on what happened beforehand. So we'd love to hear about like what it's like to bring that out publicly.
Well, I'll tell you one behind the scenes tidbit. There's a chapter on sober sex that we sort of, we're like, oh, you do it. Oh, no, you do it. Oh, no, you do it. And it's hard to write about. And it's really tender and vulnerable. And in the end, we had a chapter in there. And I pulled it at the last minute. I was like, I can't do this. Even after it had been, I think we were in copy edits when I called Jardine and said, I don't feel comfortable with this. And talk about an incredible friend. Instead of getting mad the day it was due, she said, okay. And then she wrote a beautiful new start that then I worked on, and we had a whole new chapter at the last minute that we did feel okay about. Because that's a lot of writing about recovery. A lot of the process is being kind to yourself, and you know, you want to be honest and you want to help people, but this is going to be in the world and you have to take care of yourself too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's so important.
No, sober sex is one of my favorite topics, so I'm so glad you brought this up. I would just talk about this for 45 minutes if Lisa let me, but
bring it on.
I love that you guys took this approach of doing the whole book together and talking about that from, you know, writing a chapter on something so personal. I mean, the whole book, of course, recovery is personal, but sex adds another layer to it. So. Like, what was it like writing a chapter about sober sex together? I mean, separately, but, you know, together.
It's interesting because we've both written books together. I mean, we've both written books apart and known how lonely that can be. So I think writing any part of this book with somebody by your side was really a different experience. And it was interesting. Like, there were lots of parts that we did write in the we voice. And then it was really interesting, like, where we had to give each other space because we've had different experiences. It's not an identical experience. And so we developed a way of talking about it. Like, here's where we come together and here's where we're going to separate out. And I'm going to talk about my life and you're going to talk about yours. And I mean, I think that was part of a bigger ideology too, that what we were putting forth were individual stories and not the story, but they were.
Yeah, that definitely came through in the book.
It did. I'm glad, because that was really, it ended up kind of blossoming as something that we realized was very important to us, that we weren't saying, this is how it goes, this is what it looks like, but more, these are the little moments that led up to this for me. This is where it was universal and we really connected. And then this is where it was different for her.
Yeah, that absolutely came through. I felt like I knew each of you individually by the end, but I felt like it all came together for, you know, that. And Tawny and I, similarly, you know, we bonded because we have a lot in common, yet we do everything so differently in terms of our recovery, you know, our profession, age, everything. So it's very cool to see that.
And that's one of the best parts about recovery, that it can work in so many different ways, you know, and that what brings one person joy and makes them feel wild and happy, it doesn't work for someone else. And so one thing I remember, we had a big conversation at one point about not being too much of a how-to manual. You know, we are not therapists. We're just reflecting our experience and hoping to bring beauty to other people's sober lives.
And I thought that was, it was definitely not a how-to, but what I did love was at the very end, the inclusion of all the recipes that you talk about and, you know, how to do, like someone at home can actually replicate pieces of your, you know, become a sober lush the way you guys did with specifics.
It's such a little bonkers, eccentric chapter though, which I hope is like actually suits the book and the spirit of the book, that
yes,
that collection yes. is just like, you know, definitely more whimsical than useful, but we loved putting it together. It was like a fun, it was a really fun project.
I mean, be honest, I'm not probably going to make a black glitter bath bomb as fun as it sounds, but I love the idea of making it. And I certainly will make the chocolate chip cookies.
What was it like writing nonfiction, because you guys are both, you know, established novelists and writing nonfiction? How was that? What was that like?
I mean, it's really different. The whole process has been different. You know, as soon as we thought of the book and the way that they sell a nonfiction book and the way that it's marketed is all very, very different. I think it was in some ways easier because I was doing it with Jardine for me, but it's also really frightening. It's funny with fiction. I feel it's very easy to say anything, even when it is me, because it's, you have the barrier of fiction, of saying that it's fiction, and I just kind of don't have to think about what's real and what's not real. So this process was kind of frightening, but I'm glad I got to do it with Jardine.
Yeah, and it was definitely creative nonfiction. So we kept edging over into, like, you know, using tools that we know from fiction, from poetry, from, you know, I like that place where nonfiction and fiction meet and can kind of share space and still be evocative and at the same time promise the reader, like, I'm telling you something that happened.
Yeah.
It's also really nice when you're a writer and you know your strengths and weaknesses, as I know I'm not that great at beautiful poetic description. And that's usually the last part of the book I do. I sort of have to sit down and I read Jesmyne Ward, one of my favorite fiction writers, and sort of sit with her sentences and try to do it. And I'm not that great at it. And it was so fun this time to be like, Jardine is the master. She's such a lyrical writer. And I could just say, over to you for those beautiful poetic descriptions. I think I got spoiled. Now I have to do it myself for my next novel.
Oh God. But it was mutual. I do think, like, yeah, we ended up, I think, being so glad we committed to this. It's an intense and intimate thing, as you two know, working together and being friends also, like, it's so intimate. And if anything, we're closer and we made something in the process. So.
Yeah. What about for you two? How is it to work together on such a personal project?
I feel like it's just like the way we talk, the two of us, but somebody's recording it.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, one of the things I think that comes out of it, that curious about what you think about that, this being first, you know, your first fiction or nonfiction, is when you meet people now, people come up to me all the time, like, I feel like I know you. I know you.
Yeah.
Or like, I'll say something about my brother and they'll be like, Lou, you know, like, there's that, like, kind of exposure. And they know, I mean, Tawny did. The thing from Recovery Rocks, Tawny, we did a sex episode on Recovery Rocks, and I knew she wasn't going to let me go without this, but at the very end, she was like, so Lisa, what's your favorite vibrator? And I answered it, because we're talking on Recovery Rocks. I answered it. And you know, at the time, I was still working in a big law firm, and I'm like, you know, this is going to drop. People are going to know, you know, they'll be like, oh, Lisa recommends this. Yeah.
It's fun though. Like, I mean, because like Lisa was saying, is we both, you know, we are, our ages are far apart. Like, we're bicoastal. I mean, we have different She's 12-step. I'm not, you know, there's so many differences with us, but what we do have in common is, you know, many things, but the two are recovery and rock and roll. So like, that's what the majority of our conversations are. Like whether we're recording a podcast or just FaceTiming or hanging out, we're talking about recovery or the Red Hot Chili Peppers, or like it's interchangeable with us.
It can go from the Red Hot Chili Peppers to like Harry Styles.
Yes. And then going back to the importance of support groups within 1 minute.
Yeah, it all.
We just found out that we're going to be sharing our big launch party online with Kathy Valentine of the Go-Go's, who just wrote a memoir.
God. Oh my God.
So she's going to talk with us. It's going to be really fun. I asked her. I finished her memoir. She is sober.
We got to get her on the podcast.
Yes, you do. I have her email. And she
said
that
would be amazing.
That people haven't paid that much attention to that. And her memoir is incredible with photos of all those years. And she said people haven't really brought that up. So it's obviously really important to her.
Well, the Go-Go's were the first all-women band that were on the charts, right, where they wrote and played everything. Like, there's been other women on the charts, but they wrote and played everything. And, like, they are so... They were obviously huge in the time, but like people like my age and younger don't understand how important the Go-Go's are. Oh, were.
I think I was 17 when We Got the Beat came out. And I remember like just we played it obsessively and then going to a theater to see the Go-Go's. And I can picture exactly what I wore. It was like this big red and white striped, like, poofy mini skirt thing with like a tie in my hair and the full on, like, you know, everybody wore the headbands and just kitted out. We were, you know, Adamant, the Go-Go's, all of that.
Totally.
That is so cool.
We're excited.
I love that you're doing that. So what kind of, because you talk about music a lot, what kind of music do you guys, were you listening to anything in particular when you were writing, or is there a particular, do you have music that you think about and connect to your recovery?
I'm definitely a music fiend and I'm all over the place. You know, punk rock to like classical piano music. And I think we talk about it a little bit in the book, like Miles Davis and Cedar Incense being,
right,
you know, one of those like little entry points, like how do you enter a moment when it used to be through substances? Like, music to me is definitely a hallway, a passageway, you know, into different moods and into different experiences, different ways of thinking. I'll often listen to different kinds of music before I write, the same way you read Jesmyn Ward. Like, you want to suffuse yourself with some kind of energy. And I think the book is a lot of ways into that idea too. So music is one of them. Like, how do you move yourself from mood to mood? How do you anchor into a present moment? Yeah.
I love that. And we have a chapter about how some things are impossible now, like some music festivals and stuff. And I love going to Austin City Limits sober much more than I did drinking, because I was always worried what would happen, or would I see kids? Were my kids there? And now I go and ride my bike and hang out with my kids. And I went to everything this year, and it's a whole new experience, totally different. And then, as we say in the chapter, sometimes it's too hard to go back to those places sober, and you just have to find something else.
That was one of those chapters that we diverged.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I also love music. Bonnie Raitt has always been my favorite, and she has kind of like pre and post recovery. I kind of like pre-recovery Bonnie, but I was playing the music for my kids the other night, and then I said, oh wait, here's a great song, and I played Billy Joel's Captain Jack, and they sat there, and my son goes, this is a sad song about an alcoholic. And I was like, oh my gosh, my whole youth. I just was like, Captain Jack will save you. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And, you know, I think that ties in with something, a sort of theme in the book of experiencing life in a fuller way. And just, it's very sensory, the sober lush. It's taste, it's sight, it's touch, it's hearing. So it really does sort of all fit into that. And, you know, Tawny and I have had the same experience with going to shows. At first, I couldn't do it. At first, it was like, nah, I'm not ready. But now I love it.
You did? Yeah,
it took me a while to feel comfortable. But like, my father is a heavy metal musician. So I grew up in that scene. So it didn't take me that long to feel comfortable in it, because it's like, I've grown up as a kid going to rock shows way too young to be in clubs, but like, that's just how it was. And I was a bartender for like 12 years. So like, I feel oddly comfortable in bars. I feel oddly comfortable at a loud heavy metal show, even though like most of the people around me are like slamming beers and like breaking it on their heads. I'm just like, yeah, this is nice.
Yeah, we went actually together, and you know, now in this current environment, like when we were talking about how you think back on like going to shows and that experience of being, you know, shoulder to shoulder and in it with people, and how we can't do that now. But we did before I left New York. We both obsessed with the Rolling Stones, and we went to the Stone show together, which was nice. Totally fun.
It was fun.
That's awesome.
So speaking of the current sort of environment, tell us about how you guys are doing. I mean, it's a tough, tough time, or a strange time. I mean, I'm sure people are reading a lot right now, but it's a different kind of time to launch a book. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
You know, one thing we're actually working on an essay right now together about how some of the tools that we learned are so applicable now. Obviously, we all know a lot of our recovery tools are useful now, but the one about sort of taking apart and forensically examining what you're looking for, you know, not just, oh, I wish I could go out to a restaurant now. But what is it I'm missing about that exactly? Is it the food? Is it the camaraderie? Is it the lighting? Is it somewhere new? And you can take apart your desires and try to find a new way to fulfill them. So right now, when we can't do a lot of things we love, how are we going to fulfill our desires is something Jardine and I are trying to write about right now.
That was such a huge breakthrough in getting sober too, was because I would do these like 30 day, you know, I knew I should be sober for like 15 years before I got sober. And I would try like 30 days at a time. And it was always this fear of like, I've given up all of my ways to connect, all my ways to feel rebellious, all my ways to feel glamorous, and it was such a massive breakthrough to, as Amanda said, like forensically dissect, like, what are you actually missing? Like,
right.
What do you need right. from that you think you're getting with drugs and alcohol? And I think once I did that, I was able to see more what was already there and not need so much that was elsewhere. So it was a real paradigm change. And I'm finding that that is true in these completely bizarre days where I'm getting all worked up, and then I'll slow down and just realize everything I need is right here, or practice thinking like everything you need is right here. Just look at it a different way. You know, the idea of abundance as opposed to scarcity, and just yeah. nipping that FOMO vibe in the butt. You know what I mean? Just like cutting it
Absolutely.
Off. And, yeah.
Yeah. In a way, like I have to say, I felt like, you know, now being home in pajamas all the time, you know, not having to go out to dinner at night, because that I don't love going out to dinner, just because I'm like early to bed, early to rise. And it's like, I feel like people are like, oh my God, I'm going crazy, you can't go out. I'm like, this is kind of how I live. You know? It's actually kind of normal for me on some of this stuff.
I have three kids at home now, and my husband and I both work. And so I've also done a lot of trying to keep track of when I'm losing it, you know, and when I just need to say no, I need to take a bath, I need to eat a box of Godiva chocolates, I need to Instacart a box of Godiva chocolates. and just, you know, really being aware of what that tripwire is of going too far, when I used to just pour some wine and keep on going. So it's really nice to have those that knowledge of myself. You know, this has gone too far. I have to go be alone right now. Or I'm having a lot of book clubs that want me to Zoom in. And luckily, I had a great talk with my publicist who said, look, you can go for a half an hour. And so that's right. Now what I say, you know, because I was sitting there an hour or two and everybody's drinking wine and I don't even know them. And it's okay for me to just say bye. Like The Vanish, like we write about in the book. It's okay
right,
to just
Vanish.
Pop in and then go home and get in your pajamas.
I love the idea also from the book. Maybe you could explain to people the idea of the adult snow day. Because I think right now, even though we're all home, we're all sort of overwhelmed. Like you could easily never stop. You could easily just be online all the time, you know, be doing something. There's always something that, you know, you could be doing.
Well, yeah, it's like we grew up in the Northeast. And so some days it would start snowing and you would just get the call from the principal. For me, it was on my big button wall phone. We would wait by it and it would ring and say, it's a snow day. And all of a sudden, all your obligations were gone. And I think for myself in adulthood, sometimes I would just go on a bender to get that feeling of release. And when I got sober, I had to also realize I need that sometimes. And I'm not going to go out and have four martinis, but it is okay to get back in bed and binge Normal People on Hulu and, you know, eat a bag of chocolate chips. That's okay. Sometimes you just need to turn it off, you know, and give yourself a snow day, a numb, resting day.
100%.
Another massive part of, for me, being able to finally commit to sobriety was realizing, like, I had this fiction about sobriety and wellness, like I would suddenly have to be extremely grown up and responsible 24/7. And like, you know, I think the snow day is this kind of like furtively innocent F you, like I'm not doing it. I'm not taking care of business. I'm not going to be grown up. I'm going to be like a little kid and get back in bed. And sobriety for me has not been about being rational and constantly taking care of myself. And I mean, by being sober, I'm taking better care of myself than I ever have in the past, but there are no strict rules for me beyond that. And the snow day, I think, is very symbolic of that, like celebrating disobedience in general, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's great.
Antisocial behavior.
Yeah.
Well, we're all for antisocial behavior when you need to, like the big time out, as we like to talk about all the time, like no is a complete sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and I think it's... there was an article I was telling Tawny in Medium the other day, and it was saying about how the traits that people in recovery bring to their recovery are the traits that are going to help them get through a pandemic, right? Like the idea that, you know, we've accepted what we can't control and, you know, we go for progress, not perfection. And that whole idea of keep your head where your feet are.
One day at a time. We've been doing one day at a time for, you know, Lisa's been doing one day at a time for 16 years. I've been doing it for 4.5. And, you know, like these recovery tools have just been so helpful for getting through this.
Yeah. Have you been bringing meditation in, like exercise? What do you guys do to keep yourself kind of sane? And Amanda, you have 3 kids. I'm sure it's a very busy house.
It's funny. I got the Peloton app. I don't have a bike, but the app has been free for 90 days and they have some incredible yoga classes on there. So when my kids are around, I kind of sneak off and do yoga, but whenever they're out doing things, I don't do yoga. I just do nothing, which is amazing. And I eat a lot of chocolate. Those are basically my tools right now. And I'm also in some other groups. So I go to meetings, I try to connect when I need it, or even if I'm not in the mood, I'll call somebody instead of texting or Zooming. I'm finding that to be really nourishing. Talking to Jardine. The other day I was just flipping out and I was like, I need to call Jardine because I can just say all this stuff and have somebody listen.
You know, to pick up the phone. Like that's something that a lot of people who are dealing with this pandemic, they don't have the benefit of the tools of recovery. And I hadn't even been thinking about that until I saw this article. And I was like, wow, I really have been using these tools. And, you know, I hope some non-sober people do.
Yeah, I've definitely been doing the chocolate, that for sure. meditation, doing morning pages again, which is good just to get all the junk out of my head every morning. Yeah. Calling Amanda a lot. Definitely calling people again in recovery. You forge these bonds and this network that could be, you know, already not geographical. You know, I have friends that I rely on who live thousands of miles away, and we know how to talk to each other. We know how to comfort each other and not tell each other what to do. Like, we know how to do these things already. And then I also found myself devouring the news in an unhealthy way, recognizing something familiar in that. Like, I want to control the narrative. I want to know what's going on. I want to see what's going to happen in the next few weeks. I want to own that. And because we practice one day at a time, being like, nope, you're going to close the New York Times app and like, you're not going to know what's going on. You don't know the narrative. Nobody does. Even the smartest people in the world don't seem to know what's going on. So, you know,
absolutely. Absolutely. So what would you, if you were going to tell people sort of one thing that they, that you would like them to take away from the book, what would you, what would be your advice? Say somebody new is picking up the book and they're saying, you know, I want to live a lush life.
I think that I, when I'm in a lot of, I'm on an online recovery group, and when newcomers are there, I always say, you know, it's going to be really hard for a while. You know, it just is. Day one, day 10 are really hard sober, but it is so sweet on the other side.
That's great.
That's what I say.
I think I would tell people, you deserve good company. You know, we partly wrote the book to keep people company. I was incredibly lonely for years. I was embarrassed by my issues with substances and too embarrassed to really ever ask for help. And the first company I found was through books, was reading memoirs. And I would just recommend, however a person can locate it, through meetings, through a friend, through one person online, through books, through podcasts, you know, you deserve good company.
Yes. I always tell people you deserve to be healthy and happy, because they don't, I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know that. And now I really believe that.
Same.
It sounds simple, but that's really the most profound thing.
Yeah. Right. Accepting that we deserve it.
You deserve good relationships too, like relationships with yourself, with loved ones, with partners. Like I tolerated so much mistreatment from other people and to myself. And, you know, kind of like Amanda was saying, you know, they don't tell you that like you get this huge life transformation when you get sober. I just thought I was going to not drink, but everything got better. It wasn't perfect. It's not perfect. It can be very ugly sometimes, but everything does get better if you stick with it.
I mean, I have to say, I've been wanting to be on the New York Times bestseller list for a long time. And they say the miracle would come. And the day I hit the list a few weeks ago, I was like, they told me the miracle would
what
come.
What an
here
achievement.
It is.
So yeah. Amazing.
I mean, there's a lot of miracles. And the peace of mind is the most important. But that was one of those God shot moments, like, oh, thanks. I got it.
Yeah.
Everything I was working so hard for in the wrong way. And then I started working on myself, you know, and being honest with myself. And the miracles do come, I think.
They do. And we begin to, you know, for me, I know I used to at the end look in a mirror and be like, I hate you, you know? And now I look in the mirror and I'm like, you don't suck. You're actually pretty good. You know, we're good today. And I wouldn't have expected that. I didn't think I deserved that, and I didn't think I could get it. And it really is just by showing up a day at a time. So tell our, we want everybody to read The Sober Lush, and tell everybody also where they can find you online. I know the book is everywhere and will be everywhere. But let our listeners know where they can check out more about you and the rest of your work.
I'm at JardineLaBear.com and on Instagram at JardineLaBearProjects.
And Jardine just had a big movie come out with Shailene Woodley and others.
Really?
Yes, you can watch it now. It's called Endings, Beginnings, and it's out on where, Hulu now?
It's actually out on, I think, almost all platforms. It's a Drake Doremus movie that I co-wrote with him. And Shailene Woodley stars as a woman who, you meet her in the very beginning and she gives up alcohol for 6 months and you don't really know why. And it has to do with a lot of stuff, but it's also mainly a love story, but the undercurrent has a lot to do with what we've been talking about here. So
that is incredible. Amazing.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so exciting to see it out in the world.
That's such an amazing thing. I mean, because a year ago we were talking about what even is a Green Line script or whatever.
Oh my God.
And now you're there with your movie out.
Rookie. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm at AmandaWard.com and Amanda Airward on Instagram and Twitter. I'm actually not sure.
I think so.
You are. I just stopped you.
Oh, good. You can stalk me. Great.
I just stalked you and liked a bunch of your pictures.
Oh, hooray. That's exciting.
Are you multitasking? I'm taking that phone away.
Take it. Please take it. I'm throwing it.
Well, thank you both so much. Thrilled to have you on.
Thank you.
We look forward to watching The Sober Lush as it blasts all around our sober community. We know it will.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
thank
it was
you
wonderful to talk
Absolutely.
To you.
Yeah, it's so great to meet you both, and I look forward to talking more. That's one of the best parts about this book coming out is we're meeting all these sober warriors. It's just incredible.
It's very cool. It's
a cool community. We love our sober groups. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much for
stay healthy,
us.
Everybody.
Thanks,
okay.
You too.
And Tony and I will see you next time.
Awesome.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks again to Tempest for making season 3 of Recovery Rocks possible. You can find my work at tawnylara.com, TawnyLara. Find me on social media at Tawny M. Lara, and you can follow my blog at sobrietyparty.com, sobrietea. Lisa, where can we find your work?
You can find my work on my website, lisasmithadvisory.com. You can also find me on social at Girl Walks Out, and you can find my book, Girl Walks Out of a Bar, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any other book-selling websites.
And make sure to click subscribe whenever you're listening to our podcast. You can get new episodes from Lisa and I every week directly to your phone.
Exciting.
In your pocket, like Alanis Morissette.
And then if you like what you hear, please rate us and review us. And thanks so much again for listening.